Derek Wills joins us right now. But Derek, let's start with the news of the day. Erik Karlsson is in the Pacific Division. He's a member of the San Jose Sharks. It's a large return in terms of size, but in terms of quality, the jury is out going back the other way. Your thoughts on Erik Karlsson going from Ottawa to San Jose?
Yeah, bad news for 7 of the 8 Pacific Division teams. And when I first saw the trade, I was stunned. And I think the best way to describe it, at least from my eyes, is quantity over quality. I am shocked that the best player, at least today, that the Senators got back from the Sharks is Chris Tierney, who is a good middle six forward. But, boy, I do not know how Pierre Dorion, who apparently makes hockey decisions, is going to sell this to the fan base in Ottawa. I just don't think that they got a high-profile enough player back. Now, we can't really judge the trade fully for probably 3 or 4 or 5 years until we see who the Senators draft with the picks they got, how many picks they end up getting with all the conditions that are in that trade. But boy, oh boy, today looks like a big win for the Sharks and a big loss for the Senators, at least for the time being.
I was stunned they did not get something that you can absolutely count on coming back. Mm-hmm. Now, they do have a first rounder. Where that is in 2020, we don't know. If the Sharks are anything like they've been over the last, 13 or 14 years, it'll be a later pick because they've made the playoffs 13 or 14 years, and you really can swing and miss quite easily between 20 and 31. Chris Tierney's never scored 20. 40 is a career high. That was last year. He's not young. He's 24. This probably is close to what he's going to be. And DeMello's a part, but not a top four part, I don't think. I mean, I'm stunned. They do not have an absolute no-doubt piece coming back.
No, and they got probably 2 of the Sharks' top 5 or 10 prospects, but other than NHL.com, which did have them getting the number one prospect in the organization, most of the research I've done indicates that, you know, they're getting prospects who will probably play in the league, but, you know, might not be all that impactful at the NHL level. Maybe they will be, maybe they won't be, but there are no blue chip prospects there, at least as far as I'm concerned. And I really thought that that's the one thing that they had to get back in return for Erik Karlsson. Yep. A guy who down the road, fans could say, well, maybe he'll be the next superstar. Maybe he'll be the next franchise player for the Senators, because when you're giving up your franchise player and probably the best player in the history of your franchise in his prime, and you get a lot of pieces back, but none of those pieces are all that sexy, boy, oh boy, for a fan base in Ottawa that's already disgruntled, I can't imagine how Senators fans are feeling today.
Yeah, no. You could argue there's no core part, at least yet. No, maybe Tierney becomes that. Maybe the first rounder does. Just did some reading from Corey Promen on The Athletic on Josh Norris. He is going to be a go-to guy at Michigan, but he hasn't dominated college hockey yet. That's a long way down from NHL hockey. It also means he's not signed, and if he is a guy that needs a little more time to cook in college, there could be signability issues if Ottawa remains the dumpster slash tire fire, whatever you want to call them, that it's been of late. As for Balcers, the Latvian, sooner to Showtime, but the ceiling isn't enormous. There's sort of a debate whether he'd be good enough to be a second liner or if he tops out as a third liner. So safe to say, not their best prospect or even two by most lists.
Yeah, and Norris is ranked by NHL.com ranked as the Sharks' number one prospect, but coming off just a so-so year with the Wolverines, so who knows what he's going to turn into. As for Balcers, when you look at his stats, guys, very Andrew Mangiapane-like at the American Hockey League level, around the same size, you know, put up pretty good numbers last year, 23 goals, 48 points in 67 games, but, you know, just because he's putting up good numbers at the AHL level doesn't mean that he's going to put up good numbers at the NHL level. I just thought that they had to get a blue chipper, and maybe one of these guys they already have will become a blue chipper. Maybe one of the picks they make will bring them a blue chip prospect. But right now, no sure things, at least as far as I'm concerned from a Senator's perspective. So I just don't know how you sell this to your fan base. And watching Pierre Dorion try to do it earlier today, I don't know about you guys, but it looked awfully awkward to me.
Yeah. The whole thing is...
Wasn't quite
strange.
Between two ferns awkward,
no,
but,
it was
but
not,
still uncomfortable.
It was
yes.
Not Mark Borowiecki being interviewed by and interviewing Eugene Melnyk at the same time. Wasn't quite that, no doubt. But look, I'm very much where you guys are. It's tough to come up with a dissenting opinion on this one, at least for me. It would be inauthentic, that's for sure, because I think if you're going to trade a core piece, and not just a core piece, a franchise piece, face of the franchise in his prime. Again, this is not Jerome Iginla at 36. That return was bad, but at the very least, you can understand it a little bit more. Carlson's 8 years younger, and they got nothing even close to a sure thing in return. I just don't think you can justify it. And if I'm Pierre Dorion, whether my hands are tied by Eugene Melnyk or not, I don't know if I can go to sleep feeling all that nice tonight after that trade. He's Derek Wills. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. Okay. The big story from a Flames standpoint coming out of a pair of rookie games against the Edmonton Oilers is 2016 second round pick. So I'll ask you gentlemen this. What does Dylan Dubé need to do in the next few weeks as main camp starts tomorrow to make sure he's in the starting lineup on October 3rd?
I would say more of the same, Pat, because he was a real standout in the two rookie games. I thought he was the best player on the ice for either team on Sunday afternoon and again last night. That's how good Dylan Dubé was. And if you want to know what maybe people think from an Oilers perspective about the Flames prospect, well, Bob Stauffer, who's very pro-Oilers, and I'm sure most of our listeners know that, but, you know, Bob does know hockey. He basically said that Dubé looks like a left-handed version of Braden Point. Now, him and I talked about that during the second intermission last night. He said, obviously, Dubé's not at points level yet, but he sees a lot of the same attributes in Dubé's game that he sees in Point's game. That's coming from an Oilers broadcaster. That's not coming from me or Peter Luvardius. So the fact that Bob Stauffer is talking about Dylan Dubé that way, I think it says a mouthful, but, you know, he was outstanding. And he just looked like he was better than all the other players on the ice in both games. And, you know, he did it playing with two talented line mates in the game on Sunday afternoon in Calgary, as he had Andrew Mangiapane on his left side and Spencer Fu on his right side. So, you know, that's one thing. Maybe he was bolstered by playing with two talented guys, but the fact that he did it last night with, you know, Dmitry Zavgorodny had two really good games as well, so I'm not going to knock him because I think he's one of the stories coming out of those rookie games as well, but Mike McMurtry, who didn't even play in the first game, and I wouldn't call the prospect at this point in time in his career, he was on Dubé's right side last night, and Dubé was still the most dynamic player on the ice. He skates well. He's willing to go to the hard areas and drive the net. He's got a fantastic shot. He's really responsible defensively. He made one mistake last night, and he immediately recovered for it, and he was beating himself up for it after the fact as he made his way to the bench. So, you know, this guy is so focused on making the Calgary Flames this season, and playing really well in two rookie games ain't going to do it for him. But, boy, he couldn't have got off to a better start with the way he played on Sunday afternoon and again last night. So if he can carry that into training camp and into some preseason games and his level doesn't drop off, I think he's got a great chance to start the season with the team.
I'm with you, Wilsey. I will say this. It's going to get a lot harder to do the same thing, so he's going to have to keep getting better in the sense that the pace will pick up, the size of the hockey players will pick up, the NHL experience of the players is only going to get more and more difficult. So keep going the way you're going, and I suppose it wouldn't hurt if you just outplayed everyone else vying for one of those for the final spot amongst 12 that we've kind of got in our notebooks that's available. Be better than Lazar. Be better than Klimchuk, Hathaway, Peluso, Dubé, Mangiapane, Fu, Buddy Robinson, Quine, like, be better than those guys. And I don't think that's crazy to suggest he could.
No, I don't think it's crazy either. And Pat, you watch both games right beside me, and Dubé just, he jumped right off the ice.
Yep.
It was like he was playing in a league that was below his ability. And that's what jumps out to me the most about the way he played in those first two games is that it was almost hard to compare anybody else that he was playing with, especially last night, because Mangiapane and Fru weren't playing in the game. He was playing against an Oilers team that had two of their top defensemen out in Evan Bouchard and Caleb Jones. Kyler Yamamoto kind of should be at that level, and he had his moments in last night's game. I think he was better last night than he was on Sunday, but it looked like Dubé was quite a ways ahead of him as far as where his development is at. And we're talking about a guy in Yamamoto who played 9 NHL games last season and didn't look out of place. So, man, if I'm a Flames fan, I'm pretty excited about Dubé, but I'm also taking what I saw in these rookie games with a grain of salt. If he continues to stand out in some preseason games, well, that might get me really excited.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. If he keeps on, you said do more of the same. If he keeps on doing that against better opposition, and doing it while he's being compared to NHLers as his teammates, then yeah. And what has jumped out about Dubé for me is that virtually every time he's been on the ice, something happens. His play with the puck has been dynamic. He distributes well. He's got a good shot. And what I really like, and I really paid attention yesterday because our vantage point was outstanding in Red Deer, I just really watched him away from the puck, and the way that he moves to open space in the offensive zone and gets himself in positions to receive passes because he's in good spots, that's impressive. What he does from his own blue line in, the way he anticipates, the way he breaks up plays, and the way he turns things the other way, it looked very good against his peer group. And now I'm really curious as to what it all turns out to be at playing against NHL players. So we shall wait and see, but there's no doubt about it. Dylan Dubé, the most impressive guy coming out of these two rookie games. Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. He's Ryan Pinder. I'm Pat Steinberg. He's Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames. All right, boys, the Flames have come out with their list of PTOs at training camp. We asked this question a little earlier, but I'll throw it off of you here because it's an interesting one, and I'm curious your reaction is to the two guys that we throw at you too. But 10 PTO players for the Flames, we know why. Because there's 26 guys in China, Derek, but which of these PTOs has got the best chance of fighting for an NHL job on the Flames? Which one of these guys has the best opportunity to maybe get an NHL contract from Calgary out of this?
Ooh, that is a tough question. Truthfully, none of them. That's where I'm at right now, because I'm having a hard time finding a place for some guys who I think are ready to play at the NHL level and are already under contract with the organization. We've talked about the forward group. There appears to be one spot open, right or left winger on the fourth line. Look at the defense corps. I don't think there are any spots open. If I had to pick one guy, and this is a stretch, and I'm basically just going to give you this name because you asked me a question and I'm going to try to answer it to the best of my ability. But I'll go with the goaltender because, you know, goaltending is a question mark going into the season. Can Mike Smith stay healthy and play 50, 55, 60 games during the regular season and put himself, if the Flames qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs, in a spot where he's healthy going into the postseason? You've got two young guys vying to be his backup. I believe that David Rittich is up to the challenge. Certainly was really good as Smith's backup last season. His game wasn't as good when Smith got hurt and missed a month, and he was forced into being the number one guy, and that's a tough ask for a guy in his first NHL season. You know, John Gillies, I'm not sure about. Love what he's got in his toolbox, but we'll see if he can put it all together and be a really good goaltender at the NHL level. So I'll go with Jeff Glass, because here's a guy who played really well at times behind a struggling Blackhawks team last year. He's a veteran goaltender. So let's just, for argument's sake, say that Rittich and Gillies don't work out as Smith's backup. Maybe Glass is the guy.
All right. I had Logan Shaw. Steinberg had Glass as well. We'll see, but you're right. There does not seem to be, there were probably other camps around the league where PTOs have a better shot to make the cut. Thank you, Derek. We will catch up tomorrow. And very interestingly, we're approaching that weird start time. I'm sure you'll be splitting duty between trying to get some sleep, but also paying attention to the big club in China.
Well, I prepared myself today by sleeping until 1:30 in the afternoon. Got up, did my hit with Peter Klein this morning, went back to bed, didn't have an alarm set, woke up at 1:30. So I'm trying to get ahead of it, guys.
Okay, I like it. We'll talk tomorrow, sir.
Bye, Wilsey.
All right, guys. Have a good night.